On this episode of Risk, you'll hear...
He stands up and he pulls his dick out. Yes.
And you'll hear...
I love everyone. I love you all.
And of course, you'll hear me, Kevin Allison, on the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
500 orders a month was manageable. 5,000 is madness. Embrace intelligent order fulfillment with ShipStation, the only platform combining order management, warehouse workflows, inventory, returns, and analytics in one place. What used to take 5 separate tools, ShipStation does in one. Go to ShipStation.com and use code START to try ShipStation free for 60 days.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, folks, this episode is called Weirdos, in a good way. The kind of weirdos you love, or sometimes accidental weirdos, because we also love when people aren't trying to be weird, but end up being weird anyway. Weird like Shushu, who you can hear behind me now. Now, by the time you hear this, my storytelling workshop starting on April 22nd, 2026 might have already started, but plenty of folks have taken the workshop after missing a session or even the first couple of sessions, so you might not be too late. Also, I have one starting on May 31st, so email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more about either of those. Now, to start things off, we have a story by Larry Dorsey Jr., and after that, we have something we have never done before. After Larry's story, you'll be hearing something that might make you think, I've heard this before. But you haven't. Not really. And like I said, we're going to start with the hilarious and super talented Larry Dorsey Jr. Every time Larry's been on the show, he's been amazing. This is a story he shared at a recent Risk Live show at Caveat in New York City. It's a story we call Come to Mama.
Oh, first, I would like to make a clarification for a future possible preoccupation in your mind with a word that I pronounce in the story. Okay, I'm a black guy from California. We say theater. Alright? Because this story is about my time at a theater. I'm going to be saying theater a whole lot. And I don't want you going, it's theater and all that kind of stuff. We say theater, okay? That's what we say. Black guy, am I right? Yes. See? My God. Okay. So, I was the first African American in the 35 years of existence of the top improv theater school and performance venue in Northern California. Yes, I was. And they weren't racist. They're a bunch of old school hippies. Like, they were all good-hearted people. It just happened that, if y'all know, improv, sketch, there's not a lot of black people in it, right? Especially me. I'm like a street cat that turned, like changed his life. Like, most black people who are improv are like, I'm a Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, like. And I love him. I love him with all my heart. But, yeah, so I worked my way up the ranks to be a teacher, right? I'm now teaching, and I'm teaching my very first class. It's also the first time this theater is offering stand-up comedy, right? So I'm teaching stand-up comedy and its relationship with improv. So I have all this pressure, you know, with black people, we was like, the first black person to do this, blah, blah, blah. We always have this, like, even though it shouldn't be that way, but it feels like we're representing the race, you know what I mean? And so I'm like, okay, I gotta do this, I gotta prepare. It's 6 weeks, 3 hour classes. I have to have everything in line. I want everybody to get their money's worth. It's really expensive. I want everybody to be happy. I want everybody to be successful. So many things going through my mind. And so I invite two of my homies, right? One is my godbrother. He's Native American. His name's Guatemala. And then the other one, he's like this anime black nerd from the ghetto in Oakland. But he's not that, right? He was bullied. Okay, so I love him, though. I love him. He's a stand-up comedian. Shout out him. I'm not going to say his name because then he's gonna be like, why you say that? Okay. And so they were my two TAs because I have, like, the strategy of what I was going to do with my stand-up. I was going to have people go up on stage without any preparation and just do 5 minutes right there. Get it out the way. Now you don't even have to think, oh, stand-up. He's like, boom, you have to do it right in front of us right now. And I was going to have them open up so that everybody's a little more loose. You know what I mean? That was my strategy, right? So I walk into the class. I got all my gear. I got all the equipment and everything. I got the curriculum. I'm like, yeah, I got this. All my philosophical musings and all this. And I walk in, and I see a black dude who looks like he's from the streets, right? Because if y'all know, some of y'all know the Chris Rock joke, right? Like, right? I'm that guy. I'm like, I looked at him, I was like, okay. Like, he looked like his parole or probation officer was like, do improv, it'll help you out. Right? And I look at him, and I look at Guatemo, and I look at them, I go, this motherfucker. Because we're on the side of San Francisco. I'm born and raised in San Francisco, by the way. We're in the side of the city where everybody's white and pretty much wealthy, right? We're right next to, like, Golden Gate Bridge. That's where we're at. So if y'all not familiar, Marin County is probably one of the richest places on earth. And it's across the Golden Gate Bridge. And they denied the building process of the subway transportation so that nobody would have access to that side of the bridge, right? So the area we're in, San Francisco, there also is no subway system that goes that way. So it's just wealthy people, big houses, right? So many things are processing in my mind. I'm like, how he get on this side of the city? Like, black people don't do improv. Like, I've always been the only black person at this place. Occasional black guy with a white girlfriend would come to the shows, but that's it. Like, what's good? Okay. But I'm also happy at the same time, because I'm like, yo, it's a fellow brother. Like he's in his class. That's dope. If the class sold out and there was, like, a good little hype around it, I'm like, maybe he heard or something. I'm going through all these thoughts. I'm like, whatever. Cool. I said, what's up, bro? What's your name? Oh, DeAndre? Okay, for sure. It's all good, bro. Right? I said it to him privately, because the rest of the class, I'm like, hi, guys. Greetings. We're going to... Right. And so we're getting ready. We're playing, like, these little warm-up improv games. And he's like, I got to go to the bathroom right before I'm about to start class. I'm like, damn. And so he leaves. And so I'm like, okay, I got to come up with more games to play. I'm playing games, killing time. And it turns out to be like 15 minutes past. And so I'm like, where is this dude? And he finally comes back. But he comes back sweating and kind of tweaking, right? And I'm like, oh, shit, right? Fuck, right? And so I look at him, I'm like, oh, man. And so he goes and sits down. And, you know, at this point, like at first he was buttoned up and now his shirt was like kind of unbuttoned. And so y'all know, I'm new to New York, but y'all know the dudes on the subway, he's like, I got an announcement. That's how he looks now. He went from Will Smith in Pursuit of Happiness to, I got an announcement. Quick change, right? And so I'm like, damn. And so I look at Guatemala and Ahmed, I say, yeah, yeah. When the people sit down, I was like, you sit side by side and have him in between, you know what I mean? And so I'm teaching a class, and I have like a view of the people who are going to be performing and the people sitting down, right? And so the whole time, like when we start getting people to get on stage, he's starting to do like non sequitur, like heckling, right? And I feel like the rest of the class, everybody was white, by the way. It was like 50-50 gender too. And I feel like sexual expression as well, San Francisco. So I feel like it was 50-50, like it was a good mix of whiteness. And then it was, and then it was us, you know? And he's like yelling shit out like, strawberry Nutella crepe. And I'm just like, delicious, but chill, man. Fucking random things, Scooby-Doo mysteries and fucking epistemology. I'm like, good word, but shut the fuck up. And so this mother, she told us like she recently gave birth. This was like her treat to herself, taking this class and like get out the house and stuff like that after just giving birth and whatever. She was well put together, like fashionable, like not like over fashionable, but like had her shit tight. She looked like Amy Schumer if she was German. Right? That's how she looked. She had that little accent, you know what I mean? And so she gets on stage, she's doing her thing, and the black dude, and just to describe him a little bit, he had dreads, right? He was a little darker skin, right? He was tall, he's like 6'4", like he was a big dude. Like, and so he stands up and nobody's really looking at him. At this point, they're ignoring him like the people on the subway, right? Everybody's like, oh, this guy's, you know. He stands up and he pulls his dick out. Yes. And it was big. And he starts playing with it, and I look at him, and I'm like, this is my first class. This is the height of Black Lives Matter. Like, I'm just like, oh, shit. And I go from professor to straight nigga. I always say, nigga, what the fuck you doing? And everybody's confused because I feel like the class might have thought that I had planted him there to like heckle them as part of an exercise or something, and that this was part of the class shit. I was like, yo, what are you doing, bro? And I'm like, nah, black, what the fuck? And everybody's kind of confused, like, what's going on? Like, what's happening? They're like, these black guys, they're fighting, right? And I'm just like... I was like, nah, blood, you gotta go. You gotta get the fuck up out of here. You gotta go. And that's when Ahmed and Guatemo, because they didn't see. They were like right next to him, but they didn't notice. You know what I mean? That's when they were like, oh shit, this is serious. You know what I mean? Like, and the funny thing is, when he pulled his dick out, it was like so casual. Like pulling out a cigarette. It's just like. I was hanging, you know what I mean? And when I called him out, he's like still playing it like, are you talking to me? Like, who else? I'm like, bro, get the fuck. And so Guatemala and Ahmed stand up, they grab him, escort him out, right? And for me, I'm so happy that nobody, because that was like a potential, like, you know, on so many levels, sexual assault, harassment, and hella shit. I'm so happy nobody saw it. Like, I'm still in between if the German woman saw it or not, right? And if she was like, oh, I'm not saying nothing, that was a good view or whatever, right? Like, and you know, San Francisco, I love my city because it's like the hippie movement, the LGBTQ movement. Like, we have the only transgender district in the entire world. Arguably, I think we're the most progressive place on earth, like literally, right? San Francisco is that city. We have the Folsom Street Fair. Are y'all familiar with this? Like the dude talking about that shit, I was like, I seen that when I was 9 years old in the middle of the street. Like, I seen pegging all that shit when I was a kid, right? Okay, so seriously, I did. And so, even with all of that, I was just like, yo, fuck, like, this is big. Like, What do I do? Do I call the police on this dude? Do I fucking hopefully it just blows over? Is he gonna be waiting outside for us? Like, what is gonna happen? Let me just continue teaching the class. But I couldn't. Because for the next hour or so, every like 5 to 10 minutes, he would knock on the door and be like, I'm sorry. I'm like, nigga, you can't apologize. I just saw your dick, bro. And it's bigger than mine. Fuck you. No, it doesn't matter. And I was like, bro, no, bro, you gotta go. And everybody's still confused. Like, is this part of the curriculum? Like, and I'm like, you gotta go. I'm not gonna call the police on you. I don't wanna see you get hurt, but you got to go. And he just wouldn't stop. And so the tension was so high and everybody I could see was starting to get nervous. And I was like, what? Like, I grew up doing martial arts. So did Guatemo. So did Ahmed. We all were like we're good fighters, right? So I'm like, fuck it. We gonna beat this motherfucker ass. Fuck it. Right? And then I'm like, oh shit, it's my first time teaching. Like, how? Like, I beat someone's ass on the first, making all these bounds. And then I just whoop someone's ass. Like, I can't do that. And so out of nowhere, when I'm going through so much stress, the German lady stands up and goes, like she's asking for the manager. She goes, I'm going to talk to him. Yo, when I tell you my heart fell to my nutsack, man, I was like, oh no. And everybody, the whole class, everybody was just like, oh no, no, don't do that. You don't want to do that, right? And so I run in front of her and I'm not going to physically touch her or try to stop her, right? I'm like doing basketball and football drills. Like, come on, come on, come on, man, please don't do this to me. This is my first, oh shit, right? And so she slides out the class. I go up after I tell Guatemala Ahmed, I was like, do something, teach a curriculum, do something, right? And I run outside and I look and he's standing there and he's like, oh, you know, he's a pretty towering figure. He's standing there, right? And I'm like, oh, shit. But she's already made enough gains to I can't get it. And I'm not going to turn my back to him. Like, it was like the positioning was so crazy that I couldn't, like, save her. You know what I mean? And she walks up and she goes like, this fucked my head up. She goes, come here, baby. Come give mama a hug. And he goes from like this to like a little kid. He goes, his whole body position and his structure just changes. And he turns into this little innocent person. And she comes up to him. She hugs him really just deeply. Like they're melting into each other. And she's caressing the back of his head. Don't touch black people's hair, but she was doing it. And she was she's caressing his head, patting his back, and really hugging him. Everything's gonna be okay, baby, okay? You're right, mama's got you. He's like, okay, mama. And she's like, you have somewhere safe you can go? And he's like, I think I do. I have somewhere safe I can go. She's like, okay, mama's got you. Now what you're gonna do? Mama doesn't want to see you get hurt or anything bad happen. You're gonna go to that safe place, okay? Okay, mama, you're gonna go to a safe place right now and everything's gonna be okay. He's like, okay, mama. She's like, okay, go now. And he turns around and just walks away, like with his tail tucked between his legs and just leaves. Right. And I'm standing here going, what the fuck kind of fucking witchcraft shit did I just see in my life? Right. And we go and she walks past me and just smiles, doesn't say shit. Yes. Walks back into class. I go into class. The class went well. Everybody stayed in the class. Nobody dropped out. It was like a full 6 weeks. Beautiful. Great graduation. Everything good. Right. You know what I mean? I go and check the class sheet that night, because you're supposed to report to the school director if everybody had attendance. And there was no fucking DeAndre on the class sheet. And I'm like, I'm never not checking the class sheet again. But what this taught me was that the most powerful energy on this earth is the love from women, specifically a mother. Thank you.
About a year after I got divorced, I decided to get back into the dating scene, but I thought I needed a little help. So I went to see a sex therapist, and after an examination, she said to me, oh yeah, you're kind of tight down there, but I have a solution. I'm like, okay, lay it on me. So she brings over a case and pulls out initially a dildo. The dildo was thin and white, and not contoured. It was just a long cylinder. She says to me, so I call this dildo the Boy Scout because it can get you back into the dating scene and hopefully you will not find a boy with a dildo that thin. But I have another dildo. And she pulls out the next thickest dildo. And this one she called Pee-wee Herman. Now, Pee-wee Herman was the same length, but thicker around. And she says, after you use the Boy Scout for a week or two, then you graduate to Pee-wee Herman. After Pee-wee Herman, she takes out the next dildo. This, she says, is Brad Pitt. So it's clearly thicker than Pee-wee Herman. And she says, if you can handle Brad Pitt, you'll be in good shape. But we're not done yet, she says. And she pulls out the next really thick dildo. And she says, I call this one the Rock. And if you meet a guy that's the Rock, have a great time. So I was happy to know that I was going to go back into the dating scene and be prepared. I ordered the 4-pack, and then I just sort of forgot about it.
Mindy's 4 new purchases were on their way, but great teacher though she was, there was a lesson or two she hadn't learned yet about online shopping and a little feature called autofill.
I returned to my everyday life, which was running a cooking school. And so we had teachers and classrooms. The walls in the main office were covered with cookware. Teachers would come and go and collect the cookware off the walls and take it to their classrooms. But we had a complaint from a school, and I decided I would go down to the school and see if the children were indeed hands-on.
The complaint was a familiar one for Mindy. The complainer worried that kids were spending too much of their time sitting at desks, listening to lectures about recipes, and not gaining the skills they would need to put the learning into practice in the kitchen. Mindy took it seriously.
So I got there and I saw the teacher in the back of the classroom with the majority of the kids. And in the front was a girl making bechamel sauce. And she added the cream and the flour and calls back to the teacher,
but what should I mix it with?
And the teacher says,
well, next to you is a variety of cooking tools. Why don't you just pick one of those?
And she pulls out the Rock.
In that moment, it hit Mindy a dress autofill at checkout. The 4 purchases had, in fact, arrived right on schedule. Just not where she expected.
My mouth was open. I was absolutely in shock. And she starts mixing the bechamel sauce with the Rock. And the teacher says,
well, you're not done until you taste that it's creamy.
And so she takes a lick off of the Rock. And my mouth is at my knees, absolutely in shock. The children were indeed hands-on.
And that's the director's cut of Mindy's story. Because Kevin felt the first version
needed more context.
But he'd also like everyone to know
you don't have to pay a sex therapist for whole training.
Or heck, if you're gonna pay someone for that, you might as well make it Kevin himself, because he's only really good at like a couple of things, and running this podcast is barely paying the bills.
Come get that whole wreck.
Come get that whole wreck. Get that whole wreck.
Come get that whole wreck.
We're back. with another season of The Worst Podcast.
Oh, no.
Why is he doing this?
This is the show where we talk to notable people about the worst things in life.
What is it in you that needs to control seven other people?
We should be allowed to hit two pedestrians a year.
If you want to hear real, relatable stories about all the things that go wrong in life, this is the podcast for you.
From the Sonar Network and Canada Land, find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Risk. This is Rafter behind me now. And before the break, you heard something we've never done on the show before. A little while back, we ran a story from the wonderful Mindy Myers, who did a great job telling the story called Ample Package. But due to some screw-ups on our part behind the scenes, including missing audio footage, that story went out without the amount of context we felt it could have used. So the weirdest of all weirdos, our mad genius of an editor, Taj Easton, made a new cut of the story with new context built into it by turning the story into a musical, and one that brings me into things in the weirdest of ways. But I laughed when I heard it and I thought, well, screw it. Let's throw that Redux version we made weird on our episode called Weirdos. But before that, we heard from Larry Dorsey Jr., who you can find online at Larry Dorsey Jr. Now, folks, we made a little joke in that piece before the commercial break about me needing to find other jobs outside of running this whole business, even though this is a full-time job, to say the very least, because Risk is in such dire straits. Financially, everyone on the team is having to find other work, and we're stretched really thin. It's not funny. We made a joke, but it's not funny. I feel like the stress and anxiety about keeping this business afloat is definitely shaving years off of my life expectancy. Making Risk is such a profound, deep joy and honor, but the financial side of things makes our whole staff deeply, deeply worried. So we are not at all exaggerating when we say we desperately need as much help from our listeners as possible. Now, over at Patreon, we're going to be introducing a new feature soon, which is just the stories. So Patreon members will have the option of listening to ad-free versions of the episodes, or the option of listening to just the stories without any other parts of the episodes. We're always thinking of how to add more perks over there. Another thing you will now find over on Patreon is a conversation between myself and Annie Carnreich about her story called The Bestest, that was on the recent episode called Into the Moving Dark. Holy shit. One of the best stories we've ever run. An extraordinary woman. And I just had to have a conversation with Annie to follow up. There's so much more even revealed in our conversation. So you don't want to miss the perks like that over there at Patreon. So please consider joining at patreon.com/risk, or consider increasing your donation if you're already there, or you can make a one-time donation at paypal.me/riskshow. We are so, so grateful. Next up, we have a story from Tuesday Thomas, another storyteller who's been amazing every time she's been on the show. Here's Tuesday now with a story we call The Insane, The Crazy, The Weird, The Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
here I am entering through the exit, okay? It's kind of the story of my life, not knowing where I'm going, but rushing in there and doing it anyway. I've never been into an IKEA before. It's 2009. I come from the East Coast, and they were kind of a West Coast thing. We didn't really have them. And I had just moved to LA from Vegas. LA was my dream, always my dream since I was a kid, to pursue acting, entertainment, be in the industry. And here I'm finally in a situation where I can do that. I need a couch, though. I need a couch. I don't have a couch in my new apartment in Studio City. The apartment that I could barely afford, but it's Studio City and it has the word studio in it. So that's got to be the place to be if you want to work in a studio and to be discovered. Studio City it is. And so I drove to IKEA in Burbank. I'm walking in the wrong way. I don't care. Didn't know where the entrance or exit was, but I don't care. I'm doing it. I'm free. I'm not really sure where I'm going because, you know, I can't see the signs. Everything's written on the other side of the signs because I'm coming in backwards. Going against the grain is kind of my whole life, you know. But all of a sudden I see from the back this curvy blonde woman. I thought, you know what? You got to ask people. You know, sometimes you got to ask things. So I tap her on the shoulder and I say, do you know where the couches and sofas are? And she turns around and it was Alexis fucking Arquette. Now, for those of you who don't know who Alexis Arquette is, she's a trans icon. Nepo baby, if you will. Her grandfather I saw when I was a kid was Charlie Weaver on Hollywood Squares with the old Hollywood, Rosemarie and Paul Lynde. And I think he was bottom left square. And then, you know, his mother was a Russ Meyer girl. And his father was into producing and stuff. And he has brother David. And he has an older brother. I can't remember the name, but he was an acting teacher. Sister Patricia, who's an amazing actress. And Rosanna, who's a great actress, too, had Toto write a song about her. So, I mean, this is Hollywood. You know, it's a dynasty. Old Hollywood royalty, if you will. And so she turns around and she says to me, first of all, the couches are over here and you're walking in the wrong way. You're walking in backwards. Second of all, your skin is like glass. You are so beautiful. I got to know everything about you. Coming in the wrong way. Amazing. Tell me who you are. And so we sat down on some chairs that were there and we talked for a bit. And it got to the point where like, okay, we really got to finish our business. And she says, here's my phone number. Give me yours. And so I have Alexis Arquette's phone number. And I'm like, I'm going to make it Hollywood. I'm thinking I'm on the roll here. I've been here in just a few weeks. My life wasn't that great because I was actually like running, getting divorced and running from a crazy ex-husband to finally fulfill my dreams. But here we are. I know Alexis Arquette now and I have her phone number. And of course, I'm not going to be the one that calls first. That would be Trey Ghosh. One does not call a celebrity first. One has to wait for them to summon you. And it was just a few days later that all of a sudden I got a call. She's like, hey, I'm at this little house party. Come on over. There's some people I want you to meet. And so I go to this house party. And one of the people I meet, his first name is Barry. Now, Barry was a director and a producer who directed and produced the movie Wigstock. I don't know if you know Wigstock, but it was a famous event in New York City for years that Lady Bunny ran in Tompkins Square Park that just, you know, it was Labor Day weekend, got all these queens together. It was a political, you know, fun party, all these drag queens doing crazy stuff in the park. And it just evolved into a huge annual celebration. And it was made into a movie, and Barry made it into the movie. There wasn't a lot of people at this party, but they were talking about projects they were working on and people they knew, and Holly Woodlawn's name got dropped, and I was immediately perked up because, oh my God, Warhol, trans icon, Holly Woodlawn, somebody here knows her, and oh, I might meet her someday, and if I could be picked to portray her in the story of her, all this stuff is going through my mind, you know? And so Barry says to me, unbeknownst to me, actually, Barry is producing a new movie, and what's happening is Alexis is pitching me for a part. I didn't find out this till later. But Barry says to me, he took a shine, if you will, to me. And he asked me to go to a movie premiere of sorts at the Egyptian Theater coming up. And what it was Richard Elfman's college film, which was The Forbidden Zone. And for those unfamiliar, I really pity you because everybody needs to see this movie. Everybody needs to see The Forbidden Zone. You go down into the basement of this house and open the door, and it's a whole nother planet. Ruled by Susan Terrell, who was an Academy Award nominated actress for Niagara, John Huston's Niagara, worked with Marilyn Monroe, was part of Andy Warhol's factory, and became just a misfit of Hollywood. She was very Norma Desmond, incredulous acting. Darling, how dare you type acting? You know, at this point, she had had diabetes and would not give up drinking and had both her legs cut off. It was absolutely incredible that she was going to be there for a Q&A. Now, it was Richard Elfman, Danny's brothers. It was his college film, and it was in black and white, and Danny had done the music for it with his group the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo when they wrote all the music for it. Love, who doesn't love the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo? And who doesn't love all the stuff that Danny Elfman's done since? And I'm just like, yes, I'm going to this, thank you, I'm going. Because I love the infamous song, Pico and Sepulveda, Pico and Sepulveda, from the movie. And I hadn't even lived in LA and I knew that movie, knew that song. So we went. We got in our seats. Now, the thing about this quote unquote premiere, the reason it was premiering is because Richard had just colorized the film because it was all in black and white. And as I said, it was his college film. He had colorized it himself. Afterwards, it was going to be a Q&A with Danny and Richard and Susan and people from the movie. And we sat through the fabulous film. The Egyptian is now the Netflix theater. So I'm sure they've done some work on it. But at the time, when it became time for the Q&A afterwards, to go in front of the screen, it was a dip. It was a dip down in front. So there's chairs set up, and people are walking, and they're walking down a slight incline. They're going to their chairs, but every time a person comes, they sit in the first chair available. And of course, the last one to come is Susan Terrell. So she wheels her wheelchair, being legless, down this incline. She goes in front of everybody who's already sat. She doesn't even look their way. She's looking at everybody in the audience. And I swear this woman made eye contact with every single one of the people, like looking at them like, it's me, bitches. It's me. And she just had the smirk on her face, and she wheels down to the end and she puts herself in the end. And here's where it gets fun. Because people were asking questions, but nobody was asking Susan anything. They were asking Danny and Richard. They were asking the other people who were there. And I think it was about, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes in, you can start to see Susan, her face changes. Everything is completely different. That smile is gone. That I am the queen is dissipating. And visible frustration sets in, to the point where she finally screams, who are you people? What are you doing? And she looks at everybody. She goes, I know you directed me. But she looks at somebody else and she goes, I don't even remember you being in the movie. This is just shit. Fuck all of you. And she just goes to leave. And she's wheeling herself across, and people are just, I'm agog. Everybody is just, I can't believe this happened. Now remember, I had said that there was a slight incline to get into that area. So as she's wheeling herself up the slight incline, she'd get about halfway, three quarters of the way up and roll back. She would get half or three quarters of the way up and roll back. This happened 2 to 3 times, maybe 4. And all of a sudden, she stops and her head whips to the side and she makes eye contact. And she goes, Barry! Barry! Because she knows Barry. And he stands up. He goes, do you want me to help you? She goes, no! I want that wonderful creature next to you to come down and get me out of here! And I'm like, me? I kind of put my hand on my chest and I'm pointing to myself and I'm like, me? And she's like, that's you! You! Get me out of here! And so it's a Friday night, 10:30-ish or so, in Hollywood Boulevard, and I'm walking down the Isle of the Egyptian in stiletto heels and a tight black dress, and I wheel out Susan Terrell outside into the courtyard of the Egyptian Theater. Now, at this point, she's calmer, but then her quote-unquote handlers come out, and they try. They're like, are you okay, Susan? And she's basically swatting them away like, you know, bees or flies, going, get out of here! Get out of here! I don't need you! I don't need any of you! I have her! And I'm just like, look at me. I got a new job. I am somebody. I am this close to being famous in Hollywood within 3 weeks of being here. It just gets better. I go from Alexis Arquette to Barry to Susan Terrell. And she says to me, take me out on the boulevard. My fans want to see me. And I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking Sunset Boulevard. This is like a John Waters version of Sunset Boulevard. And I get her out and I start wheeling her again in a tight black dress and stilettos, 9:30, 10:30, somewhere in that area. And so I start pushing her down the boulevard and it's crowded. It's crowded. And then all of a sudden she goes, faster, faster. And I start going faster. And she's like, faster! And she's waving at people, going, hello, fans, hello! And we go a few blocks, and I turn her around, and I'm running her back, and my tight little black dress is starting to become a belt of sorts. And I'm trying to, like, you know, not show the cooch and everything, and wheel this legless, D-list celebrity as fast as I can in stilettos. And all of a sudden, she's like, they always have a table. So we were right on the corner and she must have seen the sign and it jogged something because I turned the corner and I took her into Miss and they did have a table for her and they're like right this way and it was a big round table that had everybody from the movie. They were waiting for her. And so we come in and there's a spot for her and I wheel her in and she's calm and she's quiet. She's got a huge smile on her face and just looking around like, you know, surveying her domain and these are her peasants and they're come to glorify her and she's happy. And I'm on one side of her and then all of a sudden somebody reaches around back of her, taps me on the shoulder and says, thank you so, so much. I'm so indebted to you for taking care of her and bringing her back. Barry said that you're a cool person. We knew you'd come back, but thank you. And it's Danny Elfman. And I'm like, okay, now Danny Elfman's indebted to me. I am somebody. I'm going to be doing Carl's Jr. commercials and John Waters films any day now. And after a few minutes, Susan pounds on the table a little bit and says,
I have something to say. I just want to say, I love everyone. Everybody. I love you all. I've just always been attracted to the beautiful, to the strange.
And her arms are flailing.
To the wild, to the crazy.
And then she looks at me and her hand kind of gestures towards me and goes,
and to the deformed.
Now, I just want to say, you better be careful what you wish for in life. Because I went From the top of the heap in Hollywood, starring in Carl Jr.'s commercials and John Waters films, to being quasi-freaking-moto. Within minutes. I'm thinking I'm the best thing to happen since Betty White, but I'm just a deformed creature, and I'm not sure how to take this. But she was so happy, and she was smiling. I had so many emotions going on. I mean, she might not have meant that I was deformed. I don't know. I don't know how to take this. And everybody's just smiling, going, okay. And so was that just a thing like, this is Susan, don't take it personally? And they're just saying, thanks, Susan. She's nodding her head. She's smiling. And like, you're cool. You're cool. She's looking at me like, you're cool. I like you. But I still think she meant whatever she meant towards me out of kindness. I think it was out of kindness because she liked me. I mean, I'll never know to this day if Susan Terrell thought I was deformed, if anybody else at the table thought I was deformed. But you know what? I'll carry that glow of being called deformed by Susan Terrell, and I will take that as a compliment. And I will also take the fact how wonderful I felt and how freeing it was to finally be in Hollywood. And even though there were no actual cameras rolling, I was in a movie with Susan Terrell inside her mind.
This is Risk. This is Shuzhou behind me now again, and we just heard from Tuesday Thomas, whose award-winning documentary about her life called The Trash Goes Out on Tuesday is now streaming on Tubi, and her upcoming Hollywood Fringe show this June is called Confessions of a Groupie or How I Fucked Jim Morrison the Night He Died, But I Didn't Kill Him. So stop asking me questions, copper. And you can find her online at TuesdayThomas.com. Now, folks, like I said, I'm teaching an online storytelling workshop on April 22nd. That's 8 Wednesday evening Zoom sessions at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's okay if you've missed the first session or two. I can even catch you up with a one-on-one session alone. I'll start another one on May 31st, that's 8 Sunday morning, Zoom sessions at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Let me read you some things students have said about the workshop. One said, I was scared. I thought I was not good enough, and then all that disappeared on day one. Another said, you learn about yourself, improve your communication skills, and connect with smart and caring people across the world. And another said, the camaraderie was beautiful. Kevin's study of storytelling is deep, sharp observation, and loving kindness. Oh my gosh, I love teaching these so much. Listen, I've also been reading to people this quote from the late, great Alan Rickman recently. He said, the more we are governed by idiots and have no control over our destinies, the more we need to tell stories to each other about who we are, why we are, where we come from, and what might be possible. That's what we're up to in my workshops. So email me at kevin@risk-show.com to learn more. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
He stands up and he pulls his dick out. Yes. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.